All right, today I'm here with
Sandra Kowalik.
And my name is Michael Yurkovic, and I'm here with Audrey Short for the Voices of Women interviewing process. could you describe the positions you held or roles you have played at Ohio State?
I was a student at Ohio State University, and I was married and had a daughter, so that limited. I was in Beta Alpha Psi, but I was not an officer at that time, and it limited the amount of extracurricular things that I did on campus. We lived off campus in a home in Columbus.
You said you had a daughter. Can we talk a little bit about your family, like your background and experiences that shaped you prior to coming to the Ohio State University?
Sure. Well, I think I came from a family that, in my immediate family, I was the first person to go to college. My dad had engineering classes but didn't have a degree, and my mom was a cosmetologist, and she had that certification, but that was not a college degree. And right after high school, I went to Wright State University, and then got married, and then transferred to worked for a while, and then came back to school. At that time, I had a daughter, and started my career at Ohio State. When I was at Wright State, I took a business class, which I really enjoyed. But it was my first experience with discrimination, because during the entire trimester, even though I put my hand up numerous times, and as did other women in the class, there weren't a lot of us, it was mostly men, the professor never once called on a woman during the entire trimester. It was as if we weren't there. But I got good grades. I mean, he was fair about it, but he just didn't let us participate at all in the class in any discussions. So that's the family background prior to my coming to Ohio State. I was married and had a daughter and had some work experience before I came. And my work experience showed me that if I wanted to get in the position that I was interested in, I needed to have a college degree. Because there was a job that I applied for that I think I was perfectly well qualified to do. I could do what the people were doing, but I didn't have a degree and it required a degree. So that's when I decided to go back, and I started back part-time. I took one class a quarter at that time at night, and then decided that enough of this, it's time to go back full time, which I did.
Do you think that night classes made a difference, like versus daytime classes?
The night classes gave me the confidence that I could do well in school, because I'd been out of school for a few years, so I found that, yes, I did fine in classes. I was getting good grades and so forth. Two of the three teachers were fine. The one I wasn't very impressed with. He didn't like to take questions, and it was accounting, and some people were struggling with it. There were people that got it and people that didn't get it, and he was making fun of the ones that didn't get it, and I didn't appreciate that, but that's just what he was like. But the teacher I had after that was a grad student, and he was good. That was like my first statistics class, introduction to statistics or something.
Was the one you liked?
Yeah, I liked him. I liked the first professor, or the first teacher that I had. I don't know if he was a professor or not, but the second one was not a very good teacher. It didn't dissuade me from coming to class and doing the homework and getting a good grade.
In what ways do you generally identify yourself, both in terms of how you see yourself as well as how you see yourself in, not only, you've already spoke on gender, but race, religion, economic class?
Well, I guess gender, female, Christian background, Catholic background. So when I went to Ohio State, I guess that's how I saw myself. A single mom was kind of an identifying thing. Married, most students weren't married. So those things probably shaped my experience on campus. to some degree. In today's world, I see myself as a professional woman who's had a successful career, and I probably came from a middle income family, and now I'm probably in a little bit higher income level due to the background that I've had and my education in Ohio State and my career through the accounting.
You said you were a single mother. Did you feel that...
I wasn't a single mom then, but I was a mom.
You were a mother.
With a single daughter, and then later I was a single mom when I was in my career.
Did you feel, while you attended Ohio State, that there was any extra biases towards you because you already were having a family of sorts and people felt that that would take away from your studies, possibly?
I didn't feel that at Ohio State. As far as the professors and things like that, I don't think that mattered to them. I think as far as socialization with some of the other students, I was older and with a daughter and with, you know, I wasn't around campus and things like that. It probably made my experience on campus a little bit different.
Were there any major differences you saw between men and women on campus? I mean, you said there was the discrimination, but were there any specific aspects that stood out?
As far as just in general, no, I felt that for the most part, women and men were treated equally. I didn't see any particular bias in a general sense. In the first intermediate accounting class that I took, there was definitely bias. We came into the room, and it was a classroom that, I don't know, maybe held 24 students or something like that, and there were about 30 of us. There weren't enough seats for everyone. And the professor at the very first class, the very first day, said all the women in the class can leave because there's no jobs in accounting for women. And so I didn't. I kept my seat. I didn't move an inch. I had a seat, and I wasn't going to give it up to anybody. And I stayed the entire time. And he was fair with the class. He gave me great grades. I think I ended up with the highest grade in the class. And so he was fair in that regard, but that was pretty off-putting at the start. Later, I had to choose a major. I wanted to be in business. I knew I wanted to be in business, but I talked to a guidance counselor because he said, you know, you can take some general business classes, but now at this point, you've got to decide which direction you want to go. And I said, well, I want to be, I had seen it at the other place that I worked before I started working. I want to be in production planning. I think I'd really like that. He said, well, there's no jobs for women in production planning. You'll never get a job there. The only two areas women can do in business are accounting and marketing. And I said, well, I know I don't have the personality for marketing, but I've had some accounting classes. They weren't bad. I thought it was easy, so I'll go that direction. So that was probably one of the bigger discrimination that I faced. And it was just that one. It was his comment at the beginning, and he didn't seem to treat me unfairly after that. So
he kind of calmed down about it?
I don't know. I wasn't leaving, so I wanted the class. I wasn't leaving.
Did you feel almost that you kind of used that comment as fuel for the fire to try to motivate yourself to do better?
Probably did. It was like, well, I'll show you.
Yeah.
I get this stuff, and I did well in the two introductory classes, and this was an intermediate, and I didn't have any concerns about not being able to do the work, so I just figured I'd hang in there and move on.
Well, that kind of started to change how women were seen in business. It's changed a lot since then. Do you think?
Oh, absolutely, it has. It has, because when I graduated from Ohio State, one of my the nice things was that with they brought in a lot of public accounting, and they brought in a lot of different companies that you could interview with and write on campus, so you didn't have to go around. You just said you wanted to interview and you had the opportunity, you had your resume and you could come in and interview. So they helped me through that process get a job at Deloitte and Touche. Well, then it was Haskins and Sells. They changed their name multiple times along the way, but Haskins and Sells in public accounting. And I didn't really, when I started interviewing, I didn't think I really wanted to be in public accounting, but the best jobs were in public accounting. The money in the other jobs was a lot less. And I did some interviewing, and in one situation I would have made less than I did when I left work just to come back to school. I didn't go to college for this, so I had to find a different job. So they got me into Deloitte and Touche, and I had a wonderful career there. I learned so much, and the education I had at Ohio State really prepared me for this CPA exam. I passed all four parts the first time, and I did well. A lot of people don't pass all four parts. Some did one part of the time, and it was only given twice a year at that time, so it took you a while if you only did one part. So the education provided me a good start and all that sort of thing.
Now, you spoke upon your experiences with your professors and your classes, but is there anything you find most memorable about your experiences at Ohio State?
Well, I think I had a lot of good professors. The one guy was a jerk at the first day of class, but the rest of them were very good, and I enjoyed the classes that I took at Ohio State. And the most memorable things were getting the call to that I could, if I was interested, I could have a job at Deloitte or Haskins and Sells, and also graduation. And that just blew me away, that all these thousands of kids were coming out onto the field and they were actually handing you your diploma. It wasn't a fake box with nothing in it. It was mm-hmm. your diploma. That really blew me away. I've never forgotten that. I thought it was summer, the summer graduation, so we were in the stadium, and there were thousands of people. You walked down and they handed you your diploma. I thought that was pretty cool. That was my most memorable thing, is graduation. So look forward to it. I assume they still do that.
Man, it felt like you were on the field playing football. Everyone's cheering you on.
Right. I was just there in my cap and gown.
Now, did you find that some of your male colleagues were pushing towards fair gender equality, not only in the classroom, but possibly in their future workplaces? Like, they saw you not necessarily as just a woman, as an actual fellow student and possible colleague.
Yes, I think I think the more enlightened people were treating men and women the same. The guy that recruited me at Haskins and Sells, Dave Lauer, I've had some relationship with him my entire career now, because when I left Deloitte, then when I came to OCLC, he eventually got on the board, so I still have seen him. I saw him for a number of years there, and he was very fair. And now my boss, I'm the corporate controller at OCLC, and he is the chief financial officer. We started working together probably 30 years ago at Deloitte, and that relationship has continued on, and he was always very fair and treated me. You know, there was nothing, well, you're a woman, you can't work late, or you can't do this, or you can't do that. He expected me to do everything anyone else would do.
Yeah.
And and I was willing to do it, and, you know, but he was also, if you had, you know, a child care issue or something like that, his understanding, or, you know, a family issue that you had to take care of, he was, didn't hesitate to make sure that you could be accommodated. So, yeah, I think that's changed. When I first started at Haskins and Sells, though, in public accounting, the There were no women partners. There were no women managers. There were no women on the audit staff above, I think they could make senior, but they couldn't make manager. So no women allowed on major audits. I was in the small business department, and so I could be sent out on jobs. And there were a few clients, not most, but a few that were like, "You're a woman? A woman's going to work on this job? You're the manager?" "Yes, I am." But those tended to be older gentlemen. Men more in my age group were much more accepting of women. I think it was just the older men were not. And some of them over time got more used to women. One of the partners at Haskins and Sells when I started, the first time I had to have a conversation with him, he was a partner, and he handled difficult accounting issues. When I walked in the room, he didn't know whether to stand up or not. He was like up and, "What do I do? Should I stand when she comes in the room?" He got over that quick, and he just sat like he would do with any of the guys. So,
well, it sounds like most of the people your age were pretty
accepting of women. Yeah. I don't. So my colleagues in school and in work were very accepting. It didn't really matter if you're a man or a woman working on the job. Yeah, I didn't feel any discrimination there.
So. Did you ever encounter anyone who wasn't like that was in your age group?
No, I don't think so.
That's good.
I don't think so. I think it was changing, and it was changing enough that it wasn't really an issue. At least in the accounting world, it wasn't an issue. I don't know if this is a question on here, but as far as impacting women in the workforce, one of the things that I got involved in early after I graduated was the American Society of Women Accountants. And it was an opportunity for women in accounting to get together and, you know, talk about the issues that had been raised. It also was an issue, an opportunity for women to have leadership positions in the organization, so that I moved up through the ranks and became president of the Columbus chapter, and then eventually another woman became the national president, and I was a national secretary, so I was at a higher level. But that helped give me confidence also in leadership positions, and also taught me to manage people, because when you manage volunteers, it's a lot harder to manage volunteers who aren't being paid and then have other jobs and family options and stuff like that than it is to manage people that are working for you and are being paid a salary and know they need to be there. When you get volunteers to work for you, you know you've got some management skills there, because they don't have to be there. They can just say, "Nope, I can't do it today," right? I'm not going to do that, but you need to convince them that they want to do it. So, but I think that helped women, and we invited every October, we would invite students from Ohio State, Capitol, and I think Otterbein to come to a meeting with other women in it that were students in accounting, to encourage them and show them some of the careers that the women in our group had. So it was a good opportunity for them.
So when you left the university and joined the women's accounting group, was it still in its infancy? Was it still like starting out, or did you kind of get thrown into the midst of things and have to like figure out how to manage all these people, or did you bring it up from the get-go?
The organization was well established,
yeah,
by the time I joined it. And but they, after my first year, are always looking for people that are willing to work on the board, and the various committees on the board. So I got dragged into it pretty quickly to be the publicity chairman. And at the time, frankly, I'd never taken a speech class, and I was not comfortable getting up in front of a group. And I had to get up and stand and say about two sentences at every meeting. And, you know, my knees shook and things like that. But they worked you up through, you know, different committees and things. So the next I was membership committee, and I think I needed to do more outreach to people, and I needed to say a little bit more and do a little bit more. And then, you know, it just kept moving up until I felt comfortable running a meeting. So introducing, before you run the meeting, you have to find speakers and introduce the speakers. And I did that, and then the next time I was president. And so it took a number of years, but it gave me confidence along the way. And then after I was president, then we had some regional conferences and stuff like that. I was co-chair of those and things like that. So the experience was great, and it did a lot for me in my professional development to be a better person and to be able to run a meeting and to manage people. So it was all very good for me.
Do you know what year that started when you joined?
Oh, when I joined?
Mm-hmm.
I joined, I think, right after I started at Deloitte, so that was 76. I started the job in July, and I think I was joined in the fall sometime, October, November, sometime there. So pretty quickly, somebody asked if I wanted to come to a meeting, and I did, and I thought it was a good opportunity to be around other women, because at the time, there were only a very few women in public accounting, very few.
Was it just a fellow female accountant?
It's all accountants, but some of them were in the big firms, some were in smaller firms, mm-hmm. some were working at a company, like a business. They were in the accounting staff at a business, stuff like that. So it gave you a broad group. Some of them were self-employed, CPAs doing tax work and things like that. Some of them were still going to school, working and going to school to get their accounting degree. Is this water I can use?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Do you think at this point in time, what do you think remains undone relative to the progress of women and other diverse groups?
I think women are still having difficulty getting to the top positions in a lot of organizations. I guess I see that at OCLC. We've got in the vice presidents, I think we have two women vice presidents. Out of 15. So we've never had a woman CEO there. We've had a board chair. Our board is made up of a number of librarians, and of course there are a lot of women in the library field. And so our board chairs, we've had some women board chairs, but we've never had a woman CEO. We've never had a woman CFO. We have had a woman in the attorney position, but not for a long time now.
Well, what's a CFO?
Chief Financial Officer.
Okay.
My boss.
Okay.
So, you see that around the world, the CEOs, the top corporations, it's a big deal when a woman is a CEO, chief executive officer at an organization. There are some now, there's more than there used to be, but it's still nowhere near the top. And women are still, you know, they talk about women, equal pay for equal jobs, and that's still not the case. So there's still work to be done, but it's a whole lot better than it used to be. A whole lot better. It is possible for you to get in those positions. Like when I started at Deloitte, there were no women partners. And I'm not aware that they have any women partners there today, but they have had a few that have come and gone.
Do you think it's more based on discrimination or more based on length of time that the person has been in a position and moved up?
I'm not sure. One of the things that when you're in a partner position, especially in public accounting, you need to be bringing in more business. And how do you bring in more business? You play golf with people. You go out to dinner with people. And as a woman, going out to play golf with a man or go to dinner with a man, maybe there's still a little feeling of discomfort there. I know when the one thing I found was when we had social activities where spouses or significant others were invited, and when I was in public accounting, I got the feeling that some of the wives of the men looked at me as a rival when I had. This was a coworker. This was not somebody I had my eye on to have an affair with or anything like that. It was a coworker that I worked with every day. And if the women, especially if the women were professionals themselves, they got it. But if they weren't, they didn't get it. They were feeling like I was a rival, and I really was not a rival. I was just a coworker of these folks. And we'd go out to lunch, you know, I could be going out to lunch with four guys and me, and we were in the office, it was lunchtime, and we went together to have lunch. It was nothing of trying to establish some sort of a relationship. And sometimes it would just be two of us, a man and a woman, but we were just going to have lunch, that was it. It wasn't any more than that. Two coworkers or two friends going to have lunch. But
mutual need for food.
But when you're, especially, okay, you're coworkers, but now if the guy is working at a separate company and you're trying to get him to buy your service or be a client or whatever, doing things like playing golf or, and some of the women could play golf, I couldn't play it that well, or go to dinner. Do you bring your spouse, and then can you really talk business when it's the man and the woman needing to talk the business, and the other man and the woman are don't know each other very well? It's a little more difficult. So,
what did you typically do in that sort of a situation?
I didn't do much of that, and I was not partner. That was the job at that level. That's kind of what you needed to do, and as a manager. It was good if you could do some of that, but, you know, at that point I was a single mom, and no, it didn't work very well for me, and I didn't play golf. So, didn't do too much of that.
Is there anything that we haven't touched upon that maybe not necessarily in your major classes? Like, did you take any classes in maybe the sciences or anything along those lines?
I did. I truly enjoyed taking an anthropology class. It was totally different from doing all the business classes, and the professor was very entertaining. At one point, he's up there mimicking the monkeys in, I don't know whether it was Costa Rica or wherever it was, and he's up there and for quite a long time. He's up there going, I don't know whether they were howling monkeys, I forget what they were, but it was very interesting. So that was an interesting class. I took art appreciation classes, and I took a couple of those, and I, in talking to some of the students in there, I was like, they were art history majors, and I said to a couple of them, so what are you going to do with this when you graduate? And there was one guy that said, I want to run a museum, that's really what I want to do. So he really had, the others were like, oh, I don't know, it's just fun major. So I don't know. I was more business-minded than that. What are you going to do when you get out? Where's the money in art history? It's fun to take, but it's interesting. You learned about, especially like the second class, I think, was like Asian art. And to understand Asian art, you've got to understand Asian religions, because a lot of the artwork is related to the religion of the place. So when you see all the Buddhas, you need to understand Buddhism and things like that. So it was very interesting. I like that class a lot too. So it was interesting. I had two professors that told me that in the business area that told me, before you leave Ohio State, you need to take an insurance class. Because if you're in accounting, you need to understand insurance. And it's not required, it's not part of the core curriculum, but we do offer it. And so I took it, and he was absolutely right. It was good to understand insurance. I thought I did, but it was much more in depth, than I understood a lot more about it. And when I got into accounting, I needed it, and you know, we have insurance policies now at OCLC that I need to understand what they're talking about, what the risks are, and things like that. So it really did help me out, and that was just based on recommendations of two of the professors in accounting. I think it was my cost accounting and a management accounting professor both said take that class. So I enjoyed it a lot.
Do you think most of the things your teachers recommended to you, besides the one that asked all the women to leave the class, do you think most of their recommendations were good?
Yes, I thought the experience and the teachers and in and out of the classroom were very helpful, very good, helped me with my career. I got the information that I needed to do what I needed to do in public accounting, to pass the CPA exam, to go out to clients and be knowledgeable and handle myself well in those situations and answering questions and understanding stuff. I know the people at Franklin that went to Franklin University instead of Ohio State, they probably had more practical knowledge of what is a general ledger and how to post a journal entry and things like that, but they really struggled with a CPA exam. And if I would have gone into industry, work for Limited or something like that, I might have been able to apply that Franklin knowledge better. But going into public accounting, I needed the CPA behind my name, and I needed the technical accounting background that I got, and so that was really good. I was in Beta Alpha Psi, which is the accounting fraternity, and they brought in different people to speak to us, and that was very helpful as well. Tom Burns, I think, was the professor that was behind that. I really never knew him very well. He did the honors classes, and because I came in as a transfer student, I didn't get into the honors. That didn't work out. That didn't work that way. So I was not in the honors classes. I was in the regular classes. But I got a great knowledge. There was another class that I took that I thought was excellent. It was a tax class. It was an accelerated tax class, and it was funny. It was a 10-week class, and it was like one night a week for 4 hours or something like that, and 3 hours maybe, whatever. And we there were cases to go with like eight, because it was each one of the eight accounting firms that we had then, the big eight, would come one night and teach. And so we had all these cases to do, and you could pick the cases that you wanted to do research. And we got to go to the law library and actually do research, tax research. And that was very interesting and helped me at Deloitte as well. But it was funny. I thought, I saw all the cases, and I thought, there are, you know, maybe we had to do like maybe five out of the eight, and there were like three that were partnerships, and I thought, I'm never going to do anything with partnerships. I don't need that. So what did I do at Deloitte when I got there? Lots of partnerships. But at least I learned how to do my own research and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so it was a very good class too. I enjoyed that. And it was good because you got one of the tax professionals from each one of the big eight firms the big eight accounting firms mm-hmm. came in for one night and taught you some and went over the case. And so you got to know a little bit about each one of the firms, too. So that was good. And you're getting practical. These guys were out there in the field. It's not just professor stuff. It was actual people that were out there working. So that was good.
How did you balance having your daughter and having all of the workload at
Swiss? I'm very good at focusing, and you can ask people at work. If I'm focused, if I'm really working on it and focused on it, they can come right up to me and stand there, and unless they say something, I won't even know they're in the room. I'm just really focused on what I'm doing. People come in and drop stuff off and leave, and I don't even, they would be coming around like this and back out, and I wouldn't even know they were there. That's part of it. I'm good at focusing. I worked really hard at doing all the studying anytime I had a free time. I managed to never have an 8 o'clock class. I did that because, and you may not be able to do that now, but the thing that I did was that you were supposed to register like maybe on Wednesday, but the materials would come out on Tuesday. As soon as the materials came out, I went to the office, got the materials, sat down in the chair, figured out what classes I wanted, and put it in the box to be processed. And they may not have picked them up until the next day, but I was in the box on the very first day. So I never had an 8 o'clock class. And then I tried to have just classes that were during the day, during the school day, so that I could be home by the time she... Well, we had some neighbors that would watch her if I didn't make it, but make it back home for one reason or another. But yeah, I would do that. And then the statistics, one of the statistics courses, it was a difficult course, and in the evenings they had a recitation so that you could, it was not in the normal classes, but he would do an extra recitation that you could go in and he'd do some more problems on the board and help you understand some of the statistics. And I'd bring my daughter along, and we would sit. It was one of those classes rooms that was like this, so we would go all the way in the back, the very top row, and she would sit there and draw pictures of him and of other people, and she'd keep herself occupied while the class was going on. So it worked out all right, and I studied really, you know, I'd study on the weekends. I worked hard, and I was taking the quarter hours, but I was taking probably on average 20 hours because I wanted to get through as fast as I could. So I was taking a pretty heavy load, and I was really working hard to keep up with it. And I was doing my homework. I know one in accounting, it seems easy until you try to do it. And if you don't do your homework, you can get lost because it seems so intuitive. But when you go to actually do it, it takes more thought than it seems on the surface. And there was one woman in the class, we'd been in classes together before, and she thought, this is so, it's just obvious. I don't need to do the homework that the professor would go over the homework during class, and then he'd collect it at the end of class. And so she'd just write it down as he talked it, and she'd turn it in. And her first S came up, and she was blown away because she had never really had to do the thinking to get to the answers. So it taught me a lesson. Keep up that homework. Taught her one, too. So.
Were there a lot of people who fell into that trap?
I don't know about all the others. We were been in class together, and mm-hmm. in some of the other classes, and so she confessed what she did. And
to you or to the professor?
To me.
Oh, okay.
Not to the professor. But she picked it up. I'm sure she didn't get as good a grade as she would have. I think she was an A student, but okay. I don't think she got that far. So.
I think... Lastly, there anyone during your college experience who you felt was going out of their way to try to be a mentor towards you of any sorts?
No, I don't think so. And I think part of that was because I was a single mom and I wasn't hanging around that much. When I was done with class, I was done, you know, on to the next class or someplace to study. So I wasn't one to hang about with the professors. I think ultimately they helped me get a job at Deloitte because I'm sure their input had to do, I know that, you know, they do all those interviews of all those people. You have, it's a half an hour slot, you have 20 minutes to make your presentation, and then they have 10 minutes to write up their thoughts, and then the next student comes in, and the next student. And so when they get, you know, when they get down to, I've got 10 and I only need 5, I'm sure they talk to the professors and get input from them, and I'm sure they helped me get the job. Because that personal knowledge of somebody makes a big difference and stuff like that. So I'm sure they did, but I don't know which one in particular did it for me and helped me get the job. They were good people, and I liked the professors I had, all of them.
So, one more thing. On that note, do you care to elaborate on the differences between your previous institution and Ohio State, if there was any more bias at, you said Wright State, I'm going to say?
Yeah, it was Wright State. Well, obviously that one guy was, he was, I was in a business class and he didn't think women should be in business. And there was a lot of feeling about that. It, you know, that would have been late 60s, I think. Excuse me. So I took I took other classes there, and I didn't feel discriminated against at all. I took a physics class. I took two physics classes there, which is kind of a male-oriented thing as well. I never had any feeling like that at all. He treated everyone equally, and I never felt the bias. That was the only class I felt the bias in, was that business class. Everything else was fine. And everything else at Ohio State was fine. I didn't feel biased anywhere other than that one guy that first day. And he treated me fairly after that. He didn't dump on me at all. Or ignore me or anything like that. But I think once you show you're a good student, you're going to work hard, you're listening to what they have to say, you're working hard. Teachers appreciate that. I went to class. I didn't skip class. I was in money and banking. That was the most boring class I've ever been in. But every so often, she'd just and she'd say, "Now you really want to listen to this?" And she'd say, "This just might be on the test." She'd put it up on the board, the concept, and of course it was on the test. So it was an easy A if you just sat through a class. And a lot of people bailed. They didn't stay. So it was an easy class. She was incredibly boring. She was probably the worst professor I ever had, but she made it easy to get an A, so I didn't really care.
Now, you're saying she, did you have a lot of female professors?
Gosh, no, I really didn't. I had her. I don't think there were any women in accounting. I took a marketing class, insurance class, those were all men. Might have been a woman in the art history class. No, I didn't have a lot of women professors, they were mostly men. Money and banking. She was a doozy. So, anyway.
Do you know anyone else that you think would be willing to be interviewed if the archives were to interview more people?
I'm sure I could find you some people that would be willing to be interviewed. that are Ohio State graduates. That's what you're looking for. The woman that is, because I'm retiring in 3 weeks, the woman that's replacing me was an MBA student. I don't know if you're interested in that. I'm sure she wouldn't have lived on campus by that time. She'd already worked and things like that. So she's one person. Trisha Oler works for me, and she would have lived in the dorm and done all that and gone to Ohio State. She and her sister both went to Ohio State. Her sister works for Ohio State. I think she still does. She's a nurse in the hospital. So I don't know if you're trying to look find different. I'm an accounting graduate.
They just want everybody.
Did you ask me that? That I was a, what did I graduate in? I thought that was one of the questions. It wasn't this other one. Bachelor of Science in Business Administration, if you need to know that.
Okay. Is there anything else?
With a major in accounting.
Is there anything else you wanted to talk about that we didn't cover?
Let me look over my notes. I don't think so. I just was going to comment. It was more challenging to be a single mom in a professional career than I didn't have a wife. So the men had wives who could do the cooking and the cleaning and all that sort of thing. So I tended to work all day Saturday. If I needed to work overtime, I'd work late during the week, late on Saturday, as much as I needed on Saturday, and then took Sunday to do the grocery shopping and cleaning and laundry and all those sorts of things. So it just made it a little more difficult to do that. Let's see, I think I mentioned everybody else. Everything else, American ASWA. No, I don't have anything else to add to that, I don't think. Unless you have any more questions.
I think that concludes our interview.
Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you. Thanks for asking. Does your mom come in on Monday?